but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
I don't agree with everything that our next guest writes. We'd be crazy if we agreed. But Dan Wolkin does a fantastic job as the national columnist at USA Today Sports. He is authentic. He is unfiltered. When he needs to, he takes his shoe off and he bangs it on the table. And he did that in a fantastic column. If you haven't had a chance to read it, he wrote about college sports leaders acting like children. They're all squabbling over the CFP. We've seen these academics in action as it pertains to the Pac-12 and the presidents pointing guns at each other under the table, unable to come to a decision, unable to lead, unable to agree with each other. It's just silly and it's ridiculous and they look like children, and Dan Wolkin wrote about it and he did a great job, really smart piece, USA Today. He joins us now. Nice job with that, Dan.
Well, thank you. Lovely introduction. I do appreciate that.
Help me understand this. What are these people doing? What are they? Why can't they? Why can't they come to a consensus that college football should be a national sport? It should be very easy. You and I could sit down and go, okay, here's the format for the playoff. This would be really cool. Fans would love it. TV would love it. Why can't the leaders get together and do the same thing?
Well, this is sort of my go-to line about college athletics, and I use it all the time for various types of issues that come up in the same vein. And it is this. If you look at the NBA or the NFL or any of these established successful sports leagues, the owners of those teams, they all want to win, they all want to compete, but they primarily see each other as business partners in a greater enterprise. And they generally try to do what's best for the enterprise. College sports does not operate that way. They primarily see each other as competitors. Competitors within conferences, conferences competing with each other. And so that drives them to decisions that are often not good for the enterprise because they are all conditioned to think about any issue through the lens of what is good for their program or their conference. And so that leads you to this situation with the playoff, where it's very clear what they should do in general, but because, the Big Ten is worried the SEC's pulling one over on them, the SEC's worried that, the ACC is going to get SMU in because they're not playing anybody, and it's going to cost them. And so it all just gets tied up in knots, and you sort of wonder, okay, if they can't solve this, something that should be fairly simple, how are they going to actually solve the big stuff that's on their plate right now?
Yeah, they're not. We're watching them fumble through everything. Dan Wolkin with us, USA Today Sports. Craig Sankey's in the middle of this. You called him in your column thin-skinned. I would agree with that. He's got rabbit ears. He obviously saw what the Big 12 and the ACC commissioners put out. The greater good. Somebody has to be focused on the greater good. He is hunkered down, sort of, I think lecturing to his constituents, but what role does Sankey play in this? And is there any hope that Sankey and Tony Petitti look around like the owners do and go, hey, we're business partners. Not a great idea to lock off big swaths of the country here.
Well, one of the interesting dynamics in this is that the Big Ten is just as much of an offender in all of this as the SEC, but because the commissioner of the Big Ten is kind of underground. He doesn't really do a lot of media stuff. Sankey kind of gets saddled with the burden of the criticism and the attention and trying to explain all this. But I think in general, it really changed for him after the Texas and Oklahoma situation. That came out of nowhere. I remember at the time just how viscerally angry people in other leagues were about that. And, of course, the SEC, Sankey would say, listen, you know, they were going to leave the Big 12. They called us. If we said no, they were going to go somewhere else. They were going to go to the Big 10 or, you know, whatever. So we had to do it. Okay, fine, fair enough. But the signal that it sent to all of these other leagues was that the SEC is intent on world domination. And so from that moment on, everything flipped. He kind of became the bad guy of the whole thing. You had the alliance, the ill-fated alliance, we all remember, and then you know, the Pac-12 implodes. And we get to this place now in college sports, which I don't really think anybody particularly likes, you know, with the way these conferences have lost all of their regionality. They've lost, you know, their familiarity. They're way too big. It's a mess. And he's just kind of got to own being the face of that, whether it's his fault or not. It is on his resume. And so I think he's just sort of decided that if people are going to think I'm the bad guy no matter what I do, then I might as well just be the bad guy and do what is best for us.
I am left thinking about public confidence. And you mentioned it, like you sort of allude to the idea that, you know, this isn't great for anybody except maybe the SEC and the Big Ten. You know, the idea of guaranteeing automatic qualifiers, how much would that erode public confidence in the idea that we're getting a true national tournament if the system's stacked that way?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't even know that practically it makes much of a difference because the Big Ten and the SEC are going to get four teams in pretty much every year no matter what.
Right.
But I do think in terms of just the signal that it sends, you have codified into your postseason system that you have two leagues that have more status than everybody else. And that will undeniably lead to some unintended consequences that, you know, that maybe we haven't even thought of yet, but certainly in terms of public opinion, I think it will make the playoff look illegitimate in some ways. I think people, especially outside of that SEC Big Ten footprint, will maybe, you know, tune out to some degree. I think it's really toxic, and I don't think that's what they're going to end up doing, although, you know, that one is I think, more of a Petiti thing than a Sankey thing, because I do think the SEC recognizes if you just go, okay, five automatic conference champions, 11 at-larges, they're probably most years going to be in pretty good position to lap up a lot of those spots.
Is there another reason we're not thinking about, Dan, that they want to get the want to get it sort of in the system that are four automatic qualifiers? I mean, are they talking about maybe going beyond 16 and then they want to add more automatics? Or what is that about? If you and I know darn well they're going to get four or five teams in every year, why do they need it in writing?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, and I don't really have a good answer. But, you know, one of the things, if you want to go just like super meta conspiracy talk, a lot of the moves they're making sort of just suggest that they want to break everything, you know, just break it all so that it implodes and they can start over and just say, look, we tried, we did it, you know, it didn't work out. Now we're just going to do what we want to do. And maybe that way they can avoid, like, you know, some of the antitrust scrutiny and whatever that would come their way if this does happen. I mean, you've already seen Congress on X, Brendan Boyle, I think he's from Pennsylvania, you know, kind of throw out a warning about do this and we're going to have hearings. But, you know, there's also talk about wanting to take more automatic bids for themselves and other things besides football. You know, more guaranteed bids in basketball, maybe take some away from smaller conferences in other sports. So it all kind of leads to I think, maybe a larger plan that, you know, could really, really, I think, break the NCAA apart if that's what they want to do. I'm not sure if I believe that, but that sentiment is certainly out there.
I wonder about it as well. We're talking to Dan Wilkin, USA Today, national sports columnist. The NFL gets it, right? You mention it as a great example, Roger Goodell's league. They see each other as business partners. Is college football headed? Does it want to be the NFL? Does it fashion itself that way? Can it possibly get to that point, knowing that you've got academics ultimately running these businesses, and they're not great business people?
Yeah, no, I just don't think it can. Not in terms of the operational and infrastructure of it, and also just culturally. I mean, this whole thing about treating each other more as competitors than business partners, it goes back so far that I don't know that you can break that cycle. I mean, you're talking about, you know, schools and coaches and administrators who, you know, they have spent the last couple decades under the eye of the NCAA, and what do they always say? We want the NCAA to enforce the rules, to catch the cheaters, to punish the people who break the rules. And then the minute it happens to their school, what do? They fight back, they threaten to sue, they get their legislators involved. And that is how these people are wired. So I just don't know how you can turn that ship into a, we're going to pull in all directions, we're going to make this sort of as even as possible, and, you know, let the chips fall where they may. That's just not how these people operate.
The idea that the SEC doesn't trust the playoff committee is interesting to me, because it feels like this all started, Dan, because we said, hey, we don't want a computer picking the teams. Let's have a real playoff. Let's decide it on the field. And now I feel like we're regressing, like we're going back to an era where people are saying, well, we don't trust the data, or we don't trust the people looking at the data. Like, what are we talking about here?
I think any neutral person, or even semi-neutral person, could look at the college football playoff in its first decade and say, you know, more often than not, the SEC has gotten the benefit of the doubt. The committee recognizes how good the SEC is, how good the teams are. You know, just look at last year, even last year, you know, you had multiple three-loss SEC teams ranked above BYU. You know, and I think when you go back and look at if there was a miss in the playoff committee this past year, and hardly anyone talked about it, but I think you could have made a really good case for BYU to get in that thing, especially when you look at how well Arizona State performed in their playoff game. So, you know, my point is, like, it doesn't go their way exactly last year, and now all of a sudden the committee's no good. We can't trust the committee. It's too biased. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense. And then you have Scott Strickland, the athletic director at Florida, yesterday raising to, you know, my friend Ross Dellinger from Yahoo, said, well, you know, it would be better if it was more data-driven. and really, you know, football, it's not great. It's not a great sport for a committee, because the committee doesn't get as much data in football because it's only 12 games as they do in all of these other sports. And I mean, this is logically unsound. It's exactly backwards. You're telling me that because there's less data points available in football, that we should change the selection criteria from humans who are interpreting this data to a more data-driven process? That makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. So, I mean, these guys are reaching, they're flailing. I don't really understand why. Like, the SEC is doing great, man. Like, okay, they haven't won the last few football championships, but look what just happened in basketball. Look at what's happening in baseball. Look at what's happening in softball. They're dominating all of these sports, and it's like, why are you still so mad?
I'm wondering if some of this is driven by they're looking over at the Big Ten, and they're going, gosh, they not only gained ground on us, look at the last two championship games, they're 2-for-2. Where does that leave us? Do we need to draw some lines here? Give me an idea, Dan. Do you think the Big 12 and the ACC have enough right now where they can plant a cleat in the ground and they can hold the line, or is this thing out of their control?
Well, at some point, you do have to call the bluff. You know, you do have to say, all right, like, if you just want to leave all this behind, go do it and see where you go. You know, at some point you do. Now, other people would argue, you know, hey, look, maybe the ACC and the Big 12 should sort of team up and try to butter up the SEC and, you know, maybe, you know, blame some of this stalemate on the Big 10 and say, look, like, you're going to be fine. Like, if we make some compromises here, it's not the SEC that's going to lose bids. It's probably the Big 10. Because, you know, really, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, yeah, you got Oregon and you got Michigan and Ohio State and Penn State, but really it's a little bit weak underneath the hood there. That's one potential tactic, but I do think, like, when nothing is ever good enough for these people, then you do have to draw a line in the sand and say, all right, well, then what's your alternative? If your alternative is to leave, well, we just have to dare you to go do that.
Dan Wolkin, USA Today. Before I cut you loose, there's a tangent here. The NBA playoffs are going on, and we're watching Oklahoma City, and we're watching Minnesota. You got a Pacers team. These are not the usual suspects that the conspiracy theorists hold up and say, this is Adam Silver, this is what he wanted, this is what David Stern wanted. But I think it's great that we've got some small market teams and some parity, because it was getting boring for a while there when we could predict who would be in the finals, you know, in week two of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote a column about it today. This is exactly what the NBA was trying to do when they did their last collective bargaining agreement. I mean, that's why they made it so penal and so difficult for teams like the Boston Celtics to keep their core roster together. And it's working, right? I mean, the Celtics are going to have to, you know, kind of dismantle to a certain extent. The owners of the NBA, and I don't know about all of them, but certainly most of the ones outside of the top, you know, four or five markets that tend to get all the free agents, they wanted the talent spread around a little bit. They wanted more like an NFL-style model where the fortunes are going to go up and down a little bit each year, and teams are going to have to make hard decisions to deal with the salary cap, and a guy who you drafted is going to be in line for a payday, and you're going to have to possibly let him go. That's what they wanted. That's what they have. And that is a big reason why you're having, you know, these two teams in the finals, or, you know, on the cusp of being in the finals. And guess what? The same process is going to happen to them, and in a couple years, they're going to face these issues, and there's going to be new teams. So I do think we're headed into this NBA era where it's going to be a lot more volatile, and you know what? I'm okay with that.
Dan Wolkin, USA Today. Read him. You do a great job. I appreciate you coming on the show, Dan. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, John. Appreciate you.
There he goes. Steven, quickly before we go to break, what jumps out at you as it pertains to this debate? Because I want to leave it here, line in the sand. If I'm the Big 12 in the ACC, I feel like I should have put my foot down when the original distributions were come up and said, nope, equal distributions for everybody who participates, because now you are staring at a significant financial hill that you have to climb, and now these conferences want more teams in. Of course, they can justify it because they spend more because they have more money. But what do you do if you're the Big 12 in the ACC right now?
Yeah, you made this decision too late, but you do need to put your feet in the ground and call their bluff a little bit, because I don't think that even though the SEC and the Big Ten are more powerful because of the money they have, the money they spent, they have more power than everyone else in the game. I don't think that they're going to want to break off from the NCAA and break off from the other conferences, because if you just go with those two conferences and say, look, we have a national champion out of the Big 12 and SEC, like, that's not a real national championship. Even if teams from the Big 12 or ACC never make the national championship in a regular college football playoff, it will be, you just can't fully say it's a national champion when you're not allowing everyone to have some participation in it, and whether that's, you know, just one teams, whatever it is. So I don't think that those two conferences, the power conferences, the SEC, Big Ten, really want to break away. So you have to put your feet down. You have to call their bluff a little bit, and you can't just let them run all over you. But like you said, they should have done this earlier when they had more leverage in this whole situation, because they've lost a lot of it, and now the SEC and Big Ten are just seeing what they can get away with. It's just like it's just like with your kids. You know, they know that they can push your buttons. They're going to push it to the very end. See exactly,
yeah, they do.
See exactly how much they can take and how much they can get. That's what the SEC and Big Ten are doing. They're just going to throw things out there and see how people react, and they're going to try to get as much as possible.
Leverage, leverage, leverage. They're wielding it like a sledgehammer right now. And I hope for the sake of the sport itself, the Big 12 and the ACC have the guts and the fortitude to stand up to it. I'd love to see the playing field leveled out a little bit. Love to see a real national playoff. Love to see a true national champion, not just these teams got in because they were guaranteed spots, and who knows who didn't get in. The SEC coaches want to play crossover games against the Big Ten. We'll talk about that coming up. Plus, speaking of children, you've got the child of a generational athlete who's making a name for himself. Who am I talking about? We'll talk about it next.